Hello and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 370.
Hello, hello everybody. We are super excited to be here. And you know, we're really mixing things up on episode 369. I don't think we had a guest. And here we are on episode 370 and we do have a guest. So there, ha!
No more pattern.
Ha, everybody.
No pattern for us.
Anyway, we are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew. And I'm joined by the best co-host in the biz, my lovely wife, Anitra.
I appreciate it, but that is not true.
All right, and we are also joined. Wait, you didn't say your thing.
Right, I didn't. That's me.
All right, and we are also joined by the second best co-host person, the best guest. I don't know.
One of our
favorite
guests.
Any of these things because I don't want to ostracize anybody. Anyway, we are joined on the show this week by our friend, the Grand Apuba of Grand Gamers Guild, Mark Spector. Hello.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. And by the way, Anitra, you know, I live to hear that's me in the introduction. And as you were rambling, I thought maybe co-host for life should go on her tombstone.
Co-host for life.
Co-host
I love it.
For life.
All right, I love that so much. All right. Well, it is episode 370. And you know what that means?
It means you have some kind of fact.
I do. So the biggest thing that would come up every time I searched 370 was the Malaysia Airlines flight 370 that crashed.
Oh, yeah. No.
I didn't want to talk about that. So I found something else.
That's morbid.
Yeah, I know. This is, I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to say Abel 370. Not to be confused with Adele. That is a musical artist.
Yeah,
but Abel, A-B-E-L-L, Abel 370. What is Abel 370? Abel 370 is... It's a cool thing in space. So I'm just going to read this whole thing. A stunning example of cool stuff in space is a galaxy cluster called the Abel 370 that contains an astounding assortment of several hundred galaxies tied together by the mutual pull of gravity. So the pictures that you will find online of Abel 370 largely came from the Hubble telescope.
Sure.
Because there was this thing that they were doing called the Frontier Field Project, and it was six different galaxy clusters that they were taking pictures of with the Hubble, and this was the last galaxy cluster, the Abel 370 galaxy cluster. First of all, most of the pictures that you're going to see of it, it's primarily this one picture that the Hubble took, which is really, really incredible. It's got a lot of yellow galaxy stuff in it, but if you look really closely, there's a lot of like blue lines in the picture, and what scientists believe is that most of those blue lines are galaxies that are behind this galaxy cluster, but the reason why they look like stretched out lines and not like galaxies is because the light is actually being affected by the gravity of this cluster of galaxies, and it's bending around the cluster. So those galaxies that you see as lines in these pictures are behind the galaxy cluster itself.
So the gravity of that galaxy cluster is acting almost like a lens.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is super cool, which is really, really neat. If you zoom in and get one of the high quality versions of this picture, it makes an amazing background for your computer or your phone. It is Abel 370. Very, very cool stuff.
The universe is an astounding place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Totally agree. And Anitra has a message from our sponsor.
Did you know there's a U.S. law that allows every American to check their credit reports with each of the three major credit report bureaus each year for free? You don't have to sign up for a service or pay a monthly fee. Just go to annualcreditreport.com. It's important to check your credit reports so you know if someone has opened accounts in your name, if a creditor is misreporting an old debt, or to see which accounts you forgot to close that might be hurting your credit score. First Move has a blog post that we'll link to in the show notes about how to read your credit report. If you're overwhelmed by debt, hiring a financial advisor may not be right for you, but First Move is still happy to have a 15-minute phone call to get you going in the right direction and point you towards some free resources. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up a time to chat today.
All right, thanks so much to the team at First Move Financial for sponsoring another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. So it is the time in the show when we talk about some games that we've been playing. Anitra, we've been playing a lot of games.
Well, since our last podcast, we did go on that big trip that we were talked about. So I'm just going to run through. We played a lot of Trio and a lot of Anomia and a lot of Green Team Wins.
Yeah. But we talk about those games all the time. So first of all, not only have we played a lot of games, but Mark also has played a lot of games because Mark was at a special elite exclusive gaming retreat over the last couple of weeks. You want to talk about that?
Sure. I could talk about a lot of things. I have made a concerted effort to elevate my gaming this year, and the numbers speak loud and clear. Yeah, the Gathering of Friends was fantastic. It is an it is a by invitation industry gathering, literally, where folks meet in Niagara Falls, New York for about 10 days. I did not attend for 10 days, but the opportunity is there. And you test prototypes and you play published games and you rub elbows with all the people you could ever hope to rub elbows with. It's a really fantastic time. For me, I'm not very smart. It is an exercise in humility where I spent 5 days losing every game I played, but that's okay. That's okay.
But did you have fun losing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had my wingman, Daniel Rocky, there with me. He is my Canadian bestie, and it's a good time. It's a good time. You know, and if there's anyone I'm going to lose to, I'm happy to lose to him.
Fair.
So what was a standout game that you played?
Okay. So the question becomes, how do I, there's a few standout games. Okay. Let me begin by saying,
so let's do this. So we'll have two or three, but we'll go one at a time. So if you have a couple, I don't want you to fret too much. We'll get back to you.
Okay. Let me say that one of my initiatives this year is to try to go deep and not so wide on my gameplays. And what I mean by that is that I'm making an attempt not to just play new game after new game after new game and have my head buried in a rule book. I want to get to a point with as many games as possible where I can open the box, put them out, and just start playing. To that end, Daniel and I played many games over and over, so I'm just trying to figure out which ones I talk about. Let's start, though, with a game that we played together, but we also introduced to many people. It is relatively new hotness, and it's called Far Away. It's all one word. Are you guys familiar with this one yet?
I am not.
No.
Okay, so I'm going to attempt to explain it, but it's not that easy of a game to explain, even though it's incredibly simple mechanically. Long story short, every round you are going to draft a card, and after you draft a card, you put it in your tableau. This happens over 8 rounds. Every card is a number. If from one card to the next you continue to ascend in numbers, you get to pick up, I believe they're called temples or sanctuaries that will supplement your score. They help you at the end of the game. You're going to lay out 8 cards in whatever order you deem best, based on the opportunities available to you. And then you're going to flip them all over, keeping them in the order you established. All of them have points on them. All of them have symbols on them. All of them have scoring criteria on them. And then, even though you laid them out, let's say left to right, you are going to unflip them right to left, meaning that as you laid out your tableau, you needed to account for the things that were going to score, because they'll only score if they're face up when the scoring criteria comes up. Does that make any sense at all, or is it just word salad?
How is the scoring criteria defined?
So a given card will have a scoring criteria on it. Like, let's say it says if it has 5 blue crystals, you'll get 24 points. Well, by the time you flip that card over to hit that scoring criteria, you need to make sure that you flip 5 blue crystals. If not, you've wasted a card. And Okay. You're balancing that with all the other things the game asks you to do, because obviously there's many scoring criteria, and you're trying to get the sanctuaries. So you're trying to ascend numbers, and you're trying to get maps, which allow you to access more sanctuaries. And it's this unbelievable mind-bending mélange of very simple mechanics that is just like totally just very difficult to wrap your head around.
Okay, so I have seen this box, and if we ever do review this game, I'm absolutely stealing mind-bending mélange.
Okay, it's yours.
All right, I appreciate that. So you lay them all out, and then you flip them all face down, and then it's when you flip them face up that scoring occurs?
Correct, and you laid them down left to right, but you're going to flip them,
right to left, yeah.
Yes, and it sounds so simple, and getting it to work well is really just an exercise in madness.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. I can picture that.
I'm down. I play that game and lose at it.
Oh, I played it like 4 times and lost every time. So
okay.
Love it. All right, Anitra, talk about a game that you/we have been playing.
Well, I have been playing a ton of Sherlock Solitaire. We'll be reviewing this relatively soon, mostly because I have in fact been playing a ton of it. So this is a solitaire game, but it can also be played as 2-player co-op. It's themed around Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and some of the cases that they solve. But the actual mechanics of the game are sort of your standard Klondike solitaire on steroids. You're pulling out four cards at a time from the deck, and there are the threats, which are letters. There are the investigation cards, which are numbers. And you have to put two of these on one half of your play area and two of them on the other half. And we've talked about it a little bit before, but your goal is a little bit different depending on what mission you've picked. But your goal is always related to manipulating these stacks of cards as you build them. And you're building them number, letter, number, letter, number, letter, with all the same number in a column and all different letters in a column. The missions change that up a little bit, like you need three columns of at least four numbers, or you need a single column that's at least four cards or five number cards with no letters in it at all. So you have to use special powers to pull the letter cards back out again after you've started building it. Mechanically, it's definitely more challenging than your typical solitaire, but it's not hard to learn. Sherlock Holmes has four powers. Dr. Watson has four powers. Every one of those powers is either move this kind of card from this side to this side, or draw a card and play it, draw something from the discard and play it. That's all the powers. So it's not super complicated, but it really makes you think hard as you get into the higher difficulty levels and the different missions, because you have to figure out, how am I going to shape all of this to make it work? Because the part I didn't mention is that you activate powers by making pairs on the other half of your play area. But anytime you make a pair of the letters, the threat cards, you take a wound, and either two or three wounds, and you have lost the game. So it's one of those games that's not hard to understand, but makes you think really hard about, well, but if I do this, what's going to happen next turn? Or how does it affect the other cards I can put down every single time?
Yeah, one of the things about this that's really interesting, especially when you play it as a two-player co-op, which is, I don't think I've played this one solo. You've played it solo, and then we've played it co-op.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that the two characters, Watson and Sherlock, have slightly different powers. And sometimes when I'm playing as Watson, I want to do something that only Sherlock has the power for.
Or
and
vice versa.
There's a lot of, I mean, there certainly is luck in this game with regards to just what four cards you pull out. And whether or not they're going to enable you to do the things that you need to do. But it is a really interesting puzzle to try to move the pieces around and make them fit. I mean, the theme in this game is like super pasted on, right? It really doesn't need to be a Sherlock game. But I mean, it is a very thought-provoking, inducing kind of game. It's very thinky. So I can appreciate it from that perspective.
The art is cool, which honestly, that's the most Sherlockian thing about it, really, is the art, which is very dark and very evocative and does make me think of the darker mysteries, Hound of the Baskervilles, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks very threatening.
Well, speaking of things looking very threatening, I'm going to talk about Flashback Lucy.
Oh, good choice.
So, Mark, this one might be of interest to you and your family. So Flashback Lucy is the next game in the Flashback series. The first one was Flashback Zombie Kids, which is based on, like, at least the IP was based on the Zombie Kids Evolution game and the Zombie Teens Evolution game, where it's this kind of spoopy, sort of scary thing, but not really scary, with kind of goofy zombies. It's very cartoonish. I don't know if you've seen those games.
I know I've heard you talk about Zombie Kids, but anyway, keep going.
I think you could pick up Zombie Kids Evolution and play it with your girls, because it's a total co-op game. It's pretty fun. But Flashback Lucy and Flashback Zombie Kids before it is kind of like a collaborative Where's Waldo. So you're going to be picking up cards and looking at them and trying to see if you can see things that would allow you to pick up other cards. It's not a difficult unlock style thing where you're really trying to solve a puzzle. It's just a power of observation game where you're looking at a bunch of stuff. And then for each chapter, there's four chapters in Flashback Lucy. There are questions and you're trying to answer those questions. But if you don't answer the questions, it's not like you can't continue. So it doesn't have the kind of gated play that an unlock box or an exit box or any kind of escape room in a box would have. It's just something that, you know, really drives you to have a goal while you're playing this game. And Flashback Lucy is the story of Lucy Estrange. Is that her name?
Yeah, Estrange.
Estrange. She has been given a mansion by her aunt, And in the letter where her aunt bequeaths this mansion to her, she says, I don't have the power to protect the world from this mansion anymore. So it definitely has this kind of creepy, kind of
ominous vibe
going on. Yeah. And the story plays out in a graphic novel with rune pictures on them. And those runes correspond with cards that you have. And so as you're looking through what's going on, you'll be able to flip over a single card. It'll say kind of at the bottom, you know, flip such and such a card over, and it'll give you a perspective. And from in that perspective, you can see numbers that represent other perspectives to see the same scene from. And so you kind of flip all these cards over. You'll see a bunch of rune images. You can pull those cards and flip them over, and those will kind of give you clues too. And you sort of piece together the story of what's going on. I will say with Flashback Zombie Kids, it really didn't, like, there's some kind of interesting and unique mechanics in it, but like the story was barely held together. There was no graphic novel for it. It was all kind of floating in the ether.
It was all in the cards. And yeah. Part of it is also the Flashback Zombie Kids story was really told over like a single day of how the zombies are trying to achieve world domination and how the kids are trying to stop them. So it was in that zany style still of the rest of the Zombie Kids stuff, which is fine, but it was more of a sort of a set piece scene rather than a story that you were progressing through.
Right. And they did a much better job with Flashback Lucy of really creating a narrative, and you're trying to figure out what in the world is going on. What is with Lucy and her special powers? I don't think I'm running too much to say, like, you kind of go back in time a little bit to see some stuff like way back in history and Lucy's ancestors and all this. And it's a really compelling story. And our kids were like, let's do more. Let's do more. Let's do more. So we played the entire thing in two sittings. It's four chapters. So we did two chapters and then two chapters. I mean, it's just a great family kind of experience. It's hard to call it a game, per se.
More of an interactive story.
Yeah, it's an interactive story.
Yeah.
So let's Flashback Lucy from Scorpion Masque.
And I just want to clarify, so it's all on your table, right? There's no app or anything, because some things they've done in the past, okay, have had app assistance. Yep,
no app at all.
Interesting. All right, great.
And I would say for our listeners, if you are okay with the content level that's in like Micro Macro Crime City, which is another kind of interactive story-ish, and Where's Waldo-ish, you'd probably also be fine with the content level that's in Flashback Lucy. I would not play it with young kids. It's just, it's scary. It's spooky. And there is death in this game.
Mm. Yeah, it's not gory or anything.
But it's very obviously there.
Yeah. I think this is very much a parents just like, what are your kids comfortable with kind of thing, right? Well,
and that's why I make that disclaimer. Yeah. Like, we loved it, and our kids thought it was super interesting. But I think 4 or 5 years ago, I would not have played this with our kids. We might have played it with our oldest, who would have been 10 or 11 then. But I don't think we would have played it with our younger kids at that point.
Yeah, but now our youngest is 9 and he was totally fine with it.
Oh, yeah, he was totally fine.
So, yeah, it really depends on the kids, I guess. All right, that brings us back to one Mark Spector.
All right. That
Mark has been playing.
All right. Well, I'd like to focus on explaining an experience rather than just a game. You guys have met my wife, and you know that she is not at all a gamer. But last night, we went out with one of her coworkers to a local game cafe called House Rules. And she and her coworkers are gamers, or at least one of them is, and the other engaged. Anyway, point is, I just want to use this opportunity to say that it was an absolutely fantastic evening of playing on our local board game cafe, a whole handful of just light, easygoing, play over a beer type games. So we actually banged out 5 small games that I'll blast through real quick. The first is a game that I know as Dead Man's Draw, but that BGG surprised me, now calls Captain Carcass. It is a fantastic push your luck to the nth degree, where you're just flipping cards, you say go or don't go, and if you get a duplicate, you bust. Plain and simple. It really is just that easy, but it's pirate-themed, and the way the card powers play out is very evocative. Very evocative. Did a great job. We played two games of a fantastic little, I guess you'd almost call it a trick taker. It's really not quite, called What the Heck. This is goofy. Yeah. It's random. Okay, yeah. It's goofy. It's random. It's a little bit of reading the other players, a little bit of playing your own hand, and whoever gets the most points wins. And then, of course, a very accessible classic called Roll For It. So
yes.
Flip out the cards, place the dice, claim the cards, 40 points wins. Again, my wife, not the gamer, she was in it with everyone else, and it was fantastic. It was really, really nice to be able to bring out these three light titles, enjoy some drinks, hang out with some valued friends and colleagues, and just watch her, you know, have at it like she's been playing games for years. So good job, hon, even though you'll never hear this.
Yeah, it goes to show you there is a gamer inside of most people, right? You
know, exactly.
Even if they're not innately gamers, which is, I think, what you would describe the three of us.
Yes.
You know, she's not anti-gamer.
Correct. And we're cultivating the gaming bug in her youngest. Her youngest is the one who will come up after dinner, and we have a little collection of games that we're building for her. Popcorn dice, cover your cookies, drop it, roll for it, and we'll play a couple of light games in between dinner and bedtime. So I'm really, really proud that I've planted a seed, and it is germinating.
All right. And how old is she?
Six, about to be seven.
Yeah. So she might be just kind of edging the young age of that Flashback Lucy thing, but you know.
Yeah, I was looking at the art to determine.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, speaking of light games, I was so, so excited that we have recovered our copy of Drop It from a friend who borrowed it and I guess kind of forgot that they borrowed it. I will not name names, but we got our copy of Drop It back, and then I had the chance to pull it out a couple of nights ago and play a nice four-player game of it. Man, that game never gets old, at least for me. I love playing it. I love watching people's face when they're like, oh, or, you know, celebrating because you thought there was no way that your piece was going to fall, that it would actually score. And then it scores and you're like, oh, I got six more points. That's awesome. I love Drop It.
That's a great game. And you talk about it super fast. So I'm going to totally cheat here and I'm going to talk about two games.
Fine.
The first one is a game that I mentioned when I talked about going to Gamma Expo. And this is a game called Compile. This is a game that is coming out from Greater Than Games, due out around Gen Con timeframe. I think I described it as kind of a cross between like a Hanamakoji and a Voltage kind of a game where you're kind of competing in these different lanes. And you said it was a little bit like Rift Force.
It's quite a bit like Rift Force, except that in Rift Force, the powers were much more like every card of this suit has this power.
Right. So Compile is this game where you are drafting different like micro decks of like seven cards, and each one of them is themed on something. It's things like death, decay, lightness, darkness, life, I don't know, earth, water, like, you know, heart, whatever. Any metal. Of those things.
Yeah.
And so for, you know, lack of a you know, more detailed explanation, each player drafts three of these, then you kind of line them up. So you've got your three subcategories and, you know, the opponent's got the other three and they're kind of lined up against each other. You shuffle everything together and you're playing, and your goal is to play out 10 power worth of cards under one of the 10 or more under one of these things so that it will, air quote, compile on your next turn. And once you compile each of your three lanes, you win. But of course, there's a lot of back and forth. Some cards will allow you to move other players' cards or, you know, do other things like that. If you are going to compile, but your opponent plays cards so that their number is higher than your number, then it doesn't compile after all. So there's a lot of this fairly tight back and forth that I actually really like about this game. Do you remember the game Expedition Altiplano?
Yes.
It reminded me a little bit of that, because that was another one of those games where there was definitive back and forth with this constant fighting. And I really like this game a lot, like a lot. And I think, Anitra, you thought I was overselling it a little bit.
I did think you were overselling it, but I really like it too. I think one of the things I actually like about it is that you're not going to get too far into the other player's head in it. Like, you need to have some idea of what's going on with them, but you're really mostly focused on your own stuff. And then the occasional like, oh no, I'm going to prevent you from doing this by, you know, moving that over there. But it's not a game of predicting what's going to happen all the time.
Yeah, there are simply not a lot of copies of this in the wild yet. So we do have a couple of rule clarifications that we've reached out to Greater Than Games on, which actually would have a pretty dramatic effect on how this game is played. So there are a few things that we definitely are holding our breath on just to make sure that we're doing them correctly. But, you know, once that, I think, is all figured out, I mean, I think either way, we're going to like the game, but it yeah. definitely will impact things like strategy. So let's compile. Keep your eyes peeled for that one. We'll be talking about that one more for sure. The last one I want to talk about is a game that we've actually had on our shelf for a while, which really bothers me that we've had a review game on the shelf for so long, but it's kind of a big box and it has been daunting for us. And that is the game Genotype from Genius Games. Genotype is a game of Mendelian genetics. So if you remember your science class where you talk about the grid of dominant recessive genes, what is it called? A Punnett square?
Punnett squares.
Where you kind of look at, you've got, you know, your male and your female and they're mating and they've got dominant recessive genes and what's going to come out in the end.
And then you get into the really big words like heterozygous and homozygous.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Straight out of the Genius Games, you know, catalog. This is indeed a family show and that's where all of the stuff goes. But in all seriousness, so this is a game about breeding peas, but it's basically a worker placement game that has this heavy Mendelian genetics theme. You know, I don't think it's that complicated. We just had to get past the rule book on it, basically.
It's not super complicated, but there is a lot going on, as is true in a lot of worker placement games. Like, there's 8 different things that you can do, and as most worker placement games are, there's very few spots that allow for multiple workers on them. So anytime that you're taking something, you're also preventing other people from taking that thing. So there's definitely a lot of strategy involved. And then it has this extra step of after all the workers have been placed and you've done all these other things, you're also trying to gather the traits that you need to complete the pea plants that you're growing.
So one of the things I really like about this game is that there's 4 different traits and you roll these dice to represent the different potential combinations based on the Punnett square, based on the 4 spots on the Punnett square. And then you allocate those dice and then you get to the point in the game where you're going around and you're drafting the dice. One of the things I really appreciate about this game is you are not allowed to draft a die if that die is not something that you can place. And the reason why I like that is because it really prevents people from just flat out hate drafting dice, which you can do in some games. And it really just is kind of like it's the proper strategic thing to do, whatever. But it's just like it's one of those things that really leads to bad feelings. And especially since we're evaluating these things in a family context, like I actually kind of appreciate that there's a rule that you can't just take a die for literally no other reason than to prevent somebody else from having it.
In a family context, I believe that's what we would call a butt face move.
Yes, in the Smith family, we would call that a butt face move. That is correct.
But yeah, I did like that about it. And I think now that we've played this once and kind of gotten over the initial hurdle, we'll definitely play it a couple of more times before we review it. But like most Genius Games, this is a heavily themed game. And the theme just happens to be one that's kind of educational as a science theme.
I think my only regret with this game is that we didn't have it available to us while our daughter was going through this topic in science last year. The game was out, but I don't think we had it.
Yeah, we didn't have it yet.
I do think we're going to make her play it at some point. I would say, Mark, that...
We can make her play it after her AP bio exam is done.
Yeah. Let's wait until AP bio is over. You've met our daughter, too. And I would say that she's probably on par with your wife in terms of she's not anti-gaming, but it's just not her jam. And so, you know, she's a good sport sometimes. She's got a couple of games that she likes. But
I remember a time when it was her jam. So yeah, I feel like she was in, they all grow up, right?
Yeah, sadly.
Hold on to them when you can.
That's where we're at.
I know. Well, that's why Asher is so precious. I'm not saying he's our favorite. I'm just saying.
Asher is definitely not going to grow out of board games.
He is not mom and dad's favorite, but he might be the family gamer's favorite.
That's a good way to put it. All right.
He's not our favorite. Whatever. Anyway.
We don't have favorites.
We don't have favorites.
That's the right answer, right, Andrew.
Right.
We don't have favorites. Exactly.
All right. But Mark, do you have one more favorite game?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Let's see here. Again, I really got to think. I've been playing so wonderfully much that it's hard to pick. Let's see. Okay, here. let's go in yet a sort of a third direction. In my 2024 gaming initiative, one of the things I've also been doing is trying to have some friends over regularly for Tuesday gaming. And we got a lot of things to the table. One in particular is one of my own games, which is Garento. And, you know, usually I can play Garento without thinking about it, and I'll just go through the motions. I have a great time, but, you know, I'm not trying to win or trying to lose. I'm just doing the thing. Well, these guys are expert gamers, and I made a very concrete decision that I wasn't just gonna play without trying. And, it was a nail biter to the end. Once again, I didn't win, but it was an exceptionally good game that really just came down to everyone, I think, made the best move that they could on their turn. And, you know, the tiles all come out randomly. I mean, I'm sure none of us played a perfect game, but we were within about 15 points of each other. And, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, Garento is always amazing. It looks beautiful. It is tactile and wonderful. And yeah, just a really good time. So that was one of the four games we played that day.
Very cool.
I love Garento. Garento's a great game. It's got a place on our shelf.
Wonderful.
If I'm going to pick one more, I'm going to start segueing into the second half of our show and say I was really happy to show Stroop to a couple of people. On that trip we went to.
The trip that we went on a couple of weeks ago was a work trip for me. It was our entire company getting together for essentially a giant work retreat. It's something we do annually, but there is board gaming every evening. So these are all smart people, and Anitra likes to try to break their brains as much as possible.
I would grab people and be like, hey, let me show you a 5-minute game that's going to make your brain hurt. And they're like, really? 5 minutes? Like, learn it in 30 seconds? I'm like, yes. Here, let me show you a couple of cards. Here we go.
So Stroop is like Anomia in that you can say, oh, well, do you know what the Stroop effect is? And people are like, no. And they're like, you know that thing where like it says red, but it's written in blue? And they're like, oh, that.
I'm like, yeah, there's a whole game based on that. Want to play?
Yep.
Let's go. I probably, honestly, I like Anomia a lot. And I like that the name of it is based on a real thing, as is true with Stroop and one of the other games we're going to talk about later. But there's something about Stroop that is just... I think it's partly that you can even play it with two players and it just, you can start right away and get right into it. And it breaks your brain so beautifully.
It sure does.
Because you're racing, but like at the same time, you know, you need to get it right. And I have fun with it every single time. And it is one of the things I am excited about with, again, our spoilers for the second half. So I wanted to plug that I am still playing and enjoying the old version of Stroop. But I am looking forward to the new one.
Well, thanks.
All right.
From you, Andrew?
No, I cheated. So I'm gonna stop it there. I think it's only fair. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to listen to a snap review probably for Doomlings.
All right.
We'll listen to the snap review for Doomlings.
That sounds good.
Fun little game. Great family game. Really good family game. And then when we come back, we are going to talk about what's new with Grand Gamers Guild. There's some stuff that I was on Kickstarter right now, including a game that Anitra has already mentioned. I'm sure you can figure out what that is, but we'll talk about that after the break.
We'll be right back.
Anitra, we've seen it in all the movies. Eventually, the world is going to end.
That's a pretty scary thought. But if you ask the Doomlings, the end of the world might be pretty hilarious and cute, too.
This is a snap review for Doomlings.
Doomlings is a card game for 2 to 6 players, and a game lasts 20 to 45 minutes. It was designed by brothers Andrew and Justice Meyer, and it's published by Doomlings LLC.
Anyone can play, but they'll need to be able to read to be strategic. We've got the base box here, which notes that it is, in fact, a delightful card game about the end of the world. Not only was Justice Meyer one of the designers, he also did all of the illustrations, and they're both adorable and funny. Every trait card in the game has hilarious flavor text, and the picture of each Doomling does a great job encapsulating the idea of whatever that trait is.
The art on the catastrophe and age cards works pretty hard to evoke their namesakes as well, but the trait cards are really where the magic is in this game.
All right, Anitra, we've mentioned
all of the card types in this game at this point. So how do we actually play Doomlings?
Well, there's a little bit of setup. You shuffle the age cards and deal 3 ages into 3 piles each, 9 cards. Then shuffle the catastrophe cards and deal 1 to each stack. Shuffle up each of these little tiny stacks independently, and then stack them on top of each other. Put the birth of life on top of that deck. This is the story of your world.
Every player gets a gene pool card, which is a nice player aid to remind you of your hand limit. They place it with the 5 up and take 5 traits from the deck. The player to the left of the dealer is the first start player.
The first player flips the first age, which we all know is the birth of life, and then they go first. Each age might have a lasting effect for the rest of the round. Make sure to read it and follow it.
The game itself is very simple. Play a trait, resolve its effects, and stabilize at the end of your turn. Stabilizing means either drawing or discarding cards to get up or down to the number that is your gene pool.
Trait cards do all sorts of things. They might increase your gene pool, give extra points for certain colors, make sets, steal cards from other players, and more.
But one thing you can be sure of, you'll probably be laughing as you look through your cards.
When play gets back around to the first player, they'll flip another age card, do its effects, and keep going.
When the player flips a catastrophe, it's pretty much the same, but there are immediate effects for every player, and they're almost always bad. The player to the left becomes the new first player, and you keep going. Ignore the world's end effect unless it is the third and final catastrophe.
Speaking of the end of the world,
as you do,
if a player flips the third catastrophe, the game immediately ends. Tally up points, including any world end points. Whoever has the most points wins.
That's the gist of the game. There's some nuances in there, but you'll figure it out. This game is just not that complicated. So, Anitra, what did you expect from Doomlings?
I mean, it's cute. I admit I was swayed a little bit by the ads I saw online, which were full of self-deprecating humor. I figured this would be a silly game and easy to learn.
Honestly, I really didn't expect a lot from this game. It's cute, like you said. It reminded me of Exploding Kittens or Throw Throw Burrito or kind of something in that art style. So I figured it would be a fun enough party game that we'd play a few times and then be done with. Because, I mean, let's be honest, the art is absolutely charming. But I was actually surprised just how strategic this game could end up being. There is a small element of take that in this game, and sometimes the restrictions from the ages or catastrophes can really put a damper on your strategy. And it is tough to have diverse strategies in a game where you have at most 12 turns playing one card per turn. So this is really a game that leans a bit on luck of the draw.
A lot.
But it's lighthearted enough that hopefully you can have fun even as you go down in flames. I was surprised that the kids really seemed to enjoy Doomlings a lot. We were all laughing enough that when the mean cards came out, they just didn't seem to hurt that badly.
I wasn't surprised that the kids enjoyed it so much. I was surprised that the adults did. Doomlings strikes just the right balance of silliness and light strategy. It should feel like everything is luck in this game, but it doesn't. Unless you're supremely unlucky, there are always interesting decisions to make. And the flavor text on the cards does keep me chuckling every round. So, Andrew, do we recommend Doomlings?
I can't see why we wouldn't recommend it. This is definitely the kind of casual game a non-board game family will lean into. Doomlings is a fantastic game to get on the table after a family meal, and it's easy to teach, even really while you play it.
Everything in Doomlings is funny and approachable, and even though pre-readers won't be able to be strategic, they can still play traits based on the adorable pictures and the numbers.
And the colors. Doomlings does a great job hitting that casual family sweet spot, so we're going to give it 4 catastrophes out of 5.
And that's Doomlings
in a snap.
And we're back. We're here with our good friend Mark Spector. It might interest you, Mark, that I looked back to see how long ago it was that we first had you on the podcast, and it was episode 53, at which point we already had this well-established pattern of odd interviews and even just me and Andrew, and now we've thrown that out the window.
That's well, now fine. It's an even-numbered episode, but it is still an odd interview.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too.
The three of us, we all became friends when we all realized that Mark and I are essentially clones of the same person.
It's seriously.
We think creepily similarly on a lot of things. And so I guess I guess, Mark, we know we're going to talk about Stroop in a minute, but really my question is, what is a booba?
A booba is a bulbous rounded shape, of course. Of course.
And a kiki?
A kiki is a spiky shape. The whole world knows that.
I mean, they sound like bulbous and spiky things, for sure. But what on earth am I talking about?
What you are generously talking about, my friend, is Booba Kiki, which is the newest game from Grand Gamers Guild that is on Kickstarter right now through May 3rd. It is paired with the Stroop reprint that Anitra provided a wonderful segue into for us. And actually, just today, we opened up a third pledge level, which adds on the newest of the Holiday Hijinks titles called The Marriage Mix-Up. And that'll officially be released in con season. But since it's from the mind of John Schaffer, we said, I'm the one that does all the things, at least the things that don't require talent. And I said, why don't we make this available as well? So there you have it. Booba Kiki, Stroop, two games that are based on real life psychological concepts. And then The Marriage Mix-Up, yet another twist on our 18 card holiday themed or escape room games.
Another thing based on a psychological concept.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So we've kind of talked about what the Stroop effect is. And by the way, I love the... is this the third different box for Stroop?
It is the third different box. The fourth one's going to come out in 5 years. No, I'm just kidding. Hopefully, this is the third and last iteration. I will say, you know, one of the things that if I ever reprinted Stroop, and now we are, that I wanted to change was in the initial printing, we did standard playing cards. And then we went to square playing cards, which actually was not a good idea because of the way you handle your deck when you're playing.
Yeah.
The square cards are not as palm friendly as a standard playing card. So I'm really happy that not only do we have fantastic graphic design and visual presentation, but that physically it will be a nicer experience to play with a standard playing card again.
Nice. So you've been teasing some stuff with Booba Kiki on the Facebooks.
Yeah.
Asking about some pictures and what words describe them and things like that. So can you glue this together for people that aren't currently on the Kickstarter page, how this game works?
Yeah, absolutely. So Booba Kiki is our first attempt at a party game or a party communication game, which kind of is a combination of the mind and Dixit and the crew in the sense that there is a very basic way to play. But let me interrupt myself to say that the Booba Kiki effect is a real psychological effect that means that across culture and language, we mentally associate certain sounds with certain shapes. And the idea is that if we present random shapes and or sounds and ask the table to pair them together, that statistically there's about a 90% chance that, or rather I should say 90% of us are going to choose the same thing. Hence your fun introduction of what is a booba and what is a kiki, because yeah, they are, those two words in particular are not only the name of the effect, but they are particularly evocative of this manifesting. For real. Mm. And so what we've been doing is playing the game in as much as it's possible online, posting either one image with a set of words or one word with a set of images and asking people what they believe is the association and then answering it in a follow-up post or in a follow-up to the project updates. And it's been a fun experience. In fact, if I could do it all over again, I think I would actually have gamified it even a bit more and asked people to play along, starting like the basic scenario in the game starts, where you have you put the chit on a particular spot based on the number of players, and then you move the correct chit forward if you match and the incorrect chit forward if you don't match. And you obviously want the correct chit for matching to hit zero. And I would have tried to gamify that a bit more, but here we are in the middle of the campaign and I think we're doing a good job of it. And I'm just telling people to keep their own personal scores, when they match or don't match.
Sure. So I'm on the Kickstarter page right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Booba Kiki copy Booba Kiki is $20, which is not bad.
Nope.
If you want a Booba Kiki plus Stroop, you're looking at 36 and then everything together, including the Marriage Mix-Up, which is the latest Holiday Hijinks game, puts you at 45, and then your shipping costs are going to be 11 to 20 bucks in the US, depending on what threshold. It goes all the way up. The most expensive shipping on here is $32 to
far flung corners of the world.
Places. Australia, yes. Alaska. Yes,
the way I run a Kickstarter is I try to do a two-prong thing where I give my folks, in addition to the initial access to the game, give them a value proposition where they're paying less and they're getting more. So no matter which pledge level you choose, you're saving a small chunk off of the MSRP. And then you're also going to get things like wooden tokens and bonus packs of cards and things like that, that other people, if they want them, will have to pay for later. So yeah, we'll see how it shakes out. I mean, we are funded, but let's be honest here. I don't play a lot of the Kickstarter games that many other campaigns do. In fact, my team pretty much had to beat me about the head and shoulders to get me to do stretch goals on this campaign. I think
for sure you'll hit at least the first one. You're like $100 away. So
yeah.
Don't feel so bad.
No, it's totally okay. You know, it's a party game, and party games, they're a separate thing, and Kickstarter is a visual medium, so we don't have a lot of the bling. We just had to make the best presentation possible with, a party game, which component-wise is pretty minimal compared to a lot of what goes on there. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to put it out. I'm not the kind of company or person who is going to pull the plug just because it doesn't, hit $1 million. That's not how I operate. And, you always want more, right? People say, oh, how are sales going? Oh, I could always be selling more. But, we're in good shape. And it's, like you said, we're going to hit some stretch goals, at least at the first one. And look, at the end of the day, I get to decide the product that comes out. And there is a very good chance that we'll put more in the box than the campaign promises, regardless of what the stretch goal structure says. And honestly, that's why I don't like the stretch goals, because I know the product I want to give to the people who support me. And I don't want the stretch goals to tell me I'm not supposed to have done that. So
I feel like it's a form of social manipulation.
Exactly. Exactly. And for a really long time, I have run campaigns without stretch goals, our very first one being Garinto, which was such a tight, self-contained experience. There really wasn't anything more at the time that we felt could be appropriately added in. And we already talked about Garinto, so I don't need to belabor that. But here we are. Here we are. So,
one of the things I like about Bubikiki, again, obviously we tend to look at these things from this kind of family concept, is you're not really bringing much in the way of domain knowledge to the table, right? This is a gut feeling kind of a response to a lot of things, which means you can play this pretty much with anybody, even if somebody is doing some judging based on Drew, Adari, and Mafalo, which are the words in the little animated GIF here. Even for a pre-reader, all you would have to do is tell them what the words are.
Right.
Which is public information anyway. So this really is a game. I'm guessing it's rated 8+ or something like that, but it really is a game you could play with, anybody who could actually stay in a chair.
Which yeah.
Admittedly, might not even include my teenagers, but that's not the point. I was gonna
say, not everyone 8+ can do that.
Right. Well, and the other thing I want to point out is that once you get past the basic scenario of did we match, did we not match, the real hook is the scenario book that has 6 scenarios with 5 chapters each that bend the basic concept in different ways. And I think that's where the game really comes alive.
Okay. Yeah. I am. I'm now looking at that piece of this. Are you playing like a campaign kind of a thing?
Yes.
Here? Like a loose campaign?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're, again, let's say you're like I was the other night and you're at the bar and you just want to have a 20-minute good time. Well, you could play the basic scenario and everyone gets to bought a car. And did we match? Did we not match? Which piece are we moving forward? And which one hits the zero first? But if you want a more robust experience that'll take maybe 45 minutes, you can pick one of the 6 campaigns, which could be first contact with aliens. It could be reaching out to the other world. It could be cavemen tribes meeting for the first time and a couple of others. And we have manipulated the concept to be implemented in different ways, and you'll go through those in a sequence, and they get a little harder with each one, and you'll either at some point you'll fail or you'll get through all 5, and you can slap each other on the back and high five and then you know, if you really love it, move on to another scenario or save it for another night and a new group of friends.
Hmm. Interesting.
Very cool.
I'm zooming in on the one shot that you have of the scenario on book.
We didn't want to spoil too much. In fact, you know, I got to give credit to my social media guy. We actually had not included that. And then just apropos of nothing, he popped it in there. And he said, oh, by the way, I did this. And I said, oh, yeah, I saw that. I was wondering who did it. Because, you know, there's a few people who have their hands in the pie. And I said, that was a really good idea. Thanks for doing that. So just to, once again, let people know that, you know, this is a functioning game. This is not something we're going to spend a year of development on post-Kickstarter. This is all but a finished product. And this is just getting us the dollars to manufacture.
Well, and I think having that scenario book and having some small idea of what that looks like is super helpful. We play a lot of party games here mostly because we have to review a lot of party games. We enjoy them, but we always have new ones we need to try. So we rarely go back to the old ones, with a few exceptions. And having this scenario book would definitely be a much bigger hook for our family to say like, oh, hey, we enjoy this game. Let's do this thing that's going to twist it a little bit, or, you know, do this other thing that's going to twist it a little bit. And I think having something like that is really, really nice for families like us who are, they're somewhere in between the, we only play party games, you know, anything that takes more than 30 seconds of explanation is too much, but we're not really heavy gamers as a family. Like, we want more than just your basic party game, but not a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, the scenario book here reminds me a little bit of almost like the way The Crew.
Exactly.
The simple idea of trick taking and kind of twists it and adjusts it in ways that continue to make it interesting.
And actually, you, Andrew, deserve some inadvertent credit because you, I'm sure, remember we played the most basic version of Bubakiki sitting in an airport once. And, you know, you're a man who is of staunch opinions, and You told me that it felt lackluster, even though that might not have been your exact words at the time. I don't remember what they were. And it was out of that conversation that I went back to the team and I said, hey, guys and gals, the concept works, but we need more. And that's where this came from. So credit where credit is due.
Woohoo. All right. I'll take it.
I don't know if I ever told you that before, but it occurred to me when Anitra was talking, I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. This is born out of that experience.
All right. Way to go, airport boredom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, heck, you know, what's funny is, Tierna Nog, which is also, gonna be out for convention season, is a game that came out of airport boredom when I was sitting with Isaac Shalev in, I think it was in Dublin. And we started talking about Unreal Estate and where it was and what future plans might be.
Well, you were sitting in the right place if you're generating some ideas for Tierna Nog.
Yeah, no kidding.
Obviously.
All right. Well, look, you said that this is a game that is more or less completely built and designed and put together with maybe some tweaks on the way, but really just kind of looking to get to the point of manufacture. But I know there's some other stuff in the works, my friend.
Yeah.
I know that the pipeline is strong.
Oh my goodness gracious. Field.
So can you share some sweet scoops?
Sure. So, I mean, do you want to talk about things that are coming out for this convention season, or do you want to talk about things that are like even beyond that?
Let's focus on this year, but like maybe just a little taste of what could be coming.
Sure. So, okay. So let's talk about convention season. Literally today, I had a conversation that two new 18 card escape room games are coming. One we've already talked about. That's the Marriage Mix Up. But the very first one in the line of Endangered Rescue games is physically on its way. I have a bunch of backers who are champing at the bit waiting to get it because I am personally fulfilling the project and had to do it in two waves. Those who ordered Endangered Rescue, Galapagos Penguins, and those who didn't. And the ones who didn't have already gotten fulfilled with the American Red Wolf. But the ones who did order Endangered Rescue have just had to patiently wait as we ironed out all of the things. Escape room games are very, very particular. And it's not the kind of thing that you can fix with an expansion. So fingers crossed. I mean, we'll know for sure once it gets out to the gaming masses. But you know, we believe that we have gone over this with a fine-tooth comb and that everything should be flawless. It's a new design team, but it was guided by, again, the John Schaffer, who is the mastermind behind the Holiday Hijinks line. And so I'm super excited to be getting that out there. Let's see what else. So we have La Familia Ort. That is coming for convention season. That is a really tight and tricky farming game, which I know you guys mentioned. I don't want to say recently, because I think I'm like, was it? Okay. Okay, if it was, then I'm more caught up than I thought, because I thought I was two episodes behind, and apparently I was only one. So I was thinking
the entire reason we switched to a bi-weekly show instead of a weekly show was so that Mark could get caught up.
I appreciate that.
Nobody knew.
Thank you so much.
Now,
let's see what else. I mean, I'm just trying to blast through these things, and you're more than welcome to ask me about them. I have two partnership projects that are going to rear their head this convention season. One is called Words of a Feather. It is a partnership game that is a party style word game. And then the other one is called The Fog, which is your islanders trying to escape from an island with an ever encroaching fog, and they all move through, over, and around each other in different ways. So it's pretty exciting. Very unique action point and movement system. You're trying to get on the boats to escape the island, but it's not just any boat. It's the boat of your tribe, and it's the seat you're supposed to sit in. Yeah, I've never played anything like it. I'm really excited to have partnered on that one. Again, those are both projects that I found on Kickstarter that I felt they deserved life post-Kickstarter, and I decided to reach out to their creators and see if we could make it happen, and we did.
We released a review for Words of Feather.
Oh, that's true. Yep.
So that is out there, but I don't know nothing about The Fog, so I am trying to look it up on WordGameGeek.
Well, the problem is that there's like a million games with fog in the title. The full name is The Fog: Escape from Paradise.
All right. I just found it.
There you go. And then I guess, you know, if you want a couple scoops, I don't remember how much, if any, we have talked about these things, but the plan is to put up our first deck builder called Passaraya Supermarket Manager in the next few months. It is a really interesting deck builder that was independently published pre-pandemic. And I had every intention of bringing it out as a honed and published product much sooner, but then the world happened. And now we're getting back on it. One of the coolest things about this game is that you control your deck much more than in many other games. Long story short is that the money that you make when you sell products and the people that you hire move through your deck and your hand and your discard in a very different way. It is quite counterintuitive, actually. It takes some getting used to, but I think it makes for a really fun and unique experience that gives the player a lot of agency over how they play their game. You can maintain a thin deck. You can get a really fat deck, and you can ebb and flow your money and the products you're selling in and out of that deck multiple times throughout the game. So again, giving you a lot of agency over how it plays out. Of course, knowing that when you shuffle and draw cards, there is no small amount of randomness. And then just to wrap it around again, one more time, we're going to be doing a Holiday Hijinks set with the next three titles, numbers 10, 11, and 12, right before the holiday season, towards the end of the year. And that's this year. I can give you one more thing if you want.
One long distance teaser.
Okay, one long distance teaser. So early next year, we should have the next chapter in our Endangered series coming. Joe and I talked about doing continent boxes a long time ago, probably at the same time Stonemaier Games was talking about it for Wingspan. But they're faster than us, and they have more money than us, so they do things, you know, bigger and better than us. And we're going to be doing an Australia box, and that should find itself on crowdfunding in early 2025.
That's a lot, man. You are
a very
busy dude.
Actually, I determined today I need to slow my roll. I really need to take a breath, take a look at what I'm doing, and make sure that they're the best moves for the long-term viability of my company.
Yeah, there have been a couple of games that have come out that maybe I turned my head sideways a little bit, but you live and learn.
Exactly. And one of the things I've, as part of the mental and conversational process today is, you know, there's Mark's ego and then there's Mark's business. And, you know, we got to keep those things. One needs to keep the other in check to make sure that the business continues.
Right. Sure. I mean, you know, you're doing great things. You really are. I mean, you are growing. You must be growing. You know, we're seeing your name more and more out there, at least the Grand Gamers Guild name more and more. The holiday hijinks are incredibly successful. It's been fun to watch you grow up. And listen, we were there when Lucky Duck first got started, and look what happened with them. So
yeah,
you never know, man.
Now they just sold to Goliath. It's incredibly impressive. Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I'm not actively trying to sell myself, but like if somebody came to me with the right offer. I mean, the truth of the matter is that I think that a company, like if there was a giant company that had the ability to market, they could probably penetrate the market with the holiday hijinks stuff. Let's just say that I think they could do a better job because of their platform is just bigger than mine. I think I'm doing a great job. Every time we come out with a new one, the old ones sell more. I sold more holiday hijinks at PAX Unplugged last year than of any product ever. We're over 2024. We're probably going to double the count that's in print, and we plan to keep going. But awesome. But yeah. Anyway, sorry. I don't know if I'm digging myself a bigger hole or patting myself on the back.
I think what you're doing is you're telling all of our listeners who have heard us talk about holiday hijinks that we're not the only ones who think they're incredible. So
thanks. You know, I appreciate that.
The truth. So there. Well, speaking of holiday hijinks, I think it's a good time, Mark, to ask where people could go if they wanted to maybe buy some.
Well, everything is available at grandgamersguild.com. We have single games of holiday hijinks. We have bundles. And of course, you could pick up the marriage mix-up as part of the bundle on the Bubakiki campaign. And all our other titles are there as well. When you talk to Grand Gamers Guild, whether you find Facebook or email or Board Game Geek, you are always talking to me. I write the checks and sweep the floors.
Yeah, you know, you can go to grandgamersguild.com, and right on the homepage there is a link to the Kickstarter. So you don't have to worry about trying to find a Kickstarter link or going to Kickstarter and searching for it. Go to grandgamersguild.com, buy a couple of copies of various holiday hijinks. Maybe pick up a copy of La Familia Ort when it's available and hit that Kickstarter page this week, because this podcast is coming out on Monday the 29th. And so at that point, you only have 5 days to get in on the Kickstarter. There will probably be late pledging and things like that, but why make Mark wait?
Thank you so much.
Well, and take my word for it. Stroop, especially in this format with the normal playing cards, is amazing. Amazing. And Bubakiki looks even better.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to bringing Bubakiki to the next work retreat.
Because that would be great.
It'll be an absolute
yes
hit. Anitra, where can people find the Family Gamers on the internet when they're done with GrandGamersGuild.com?
Well, you can find the show notes for this show and all 369 of our other episodes at thefamilygamers.com, along with reviews of a lot of the games that we talked about today. You can find us on social media, pretty much all the socials media, at Family Gamers AA.
Yep. You can also head over to Facebook and find the Family Gamers community, which is a great place to go to talk to lots of people about family gaming and, you know, playing games with the various kids in their lives. I think Mark has dropped one or two of these Bubakiki questions in there. I don't, maybe not, maybe in some other groups, or maybe just on your own page, Mark, but feel free to drop one in the Family Gamers community. Get people interested in that. That is thefamilygamers.com/community, or just head over to Facebook and search for the Family Gamers community.
And if Facebook is not your thing, or you would like an even smaller, more tight-knit community, you can join the Family Tabletop community on Discord, which is not just the Family Gamers, some other small-time family-related content creators.
We're all small-time. Well. What are you kidding me?
Well, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Don't forget, you can always just shoot us an email if you have questions for us, if you want personalized recommendations or whatever. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra at thefamilygamers.com, but you'll get a better response if you email Andrew.
And if you want to ask for a specialty holiday hijinks, you can always email Mark, too. I don't know what his email address is, though.
GrandGamersGuild@gmail.com.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise. We've got t-shirts and hoodies and mugs and more stuff like that at thefamilygamers.com/merch. We're starting to get into con season. You want to be able to go to your favorite conventions and sport your favorite podcasts merchandise. And that's obviously ours, because who else would it be?
Obviously, even though we still didn't make it to even the Golden Geek nomination round. But Some year we will.
Someday.
Hey, I wore my Family Gamers t-shirt last night to the gaming cafe. So
I appreciate that.
Thanks.
I appreciate
that.
Yep, no problem.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Family Gamers Podcast. Tell your friends about the Family Gamers Podcast and tell everybody else about the Family Gamers Podcast by leaving us a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you go to get your podcasts. You can also find us on Amazon Music and TuneIn and Spotify and really anything else that we can think of that we would put our podcast on. We've tried to do that.
Anywhere your favorite free podcasts are sold.
Anywhere they sell fine free podcasts.
Yeah.
All right.
Finally, the Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. You should go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
And if you have a question, remember, about how to read your credit report, there is a link to the specific post about that in the show notes. So go check that out.
Well, I think that's going to be it for this week. Thanks again, Mark, for coming on the show. We love having you every time, and you put your weight behind so many great games.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And it is always a pleasure to talk, and I'm sure we will talk again sometime soon.
Probably by messenger tomorrow.
That's very, very possible. But everybody else out there, we'll talk in 2 weeks. So until then, play games with your kids.